Brought to you by Lightspeed Zulu, simply the quietest, most comfortable headset in the world. And by Phillips 66 Aviation, the most trusted wings in aviation. If you could own the world's quietest, most comfortable aviation headset, why would you want anything else? Visit Lightspeed Aviation's pavilion outside Hangar B and ask about our expanded trade-up program, opening the door to everyone ready to move up to a Zulu. And while you're here, vote for your favorite aviation charity. The top five will each receive $10,000 from the Lightspeed Aviation Foundation.
You're listening to AvWeb continuing coverage of EAA Air Venture 2010. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting. I'm with Mike Kraft, who's General Manager and VP of Lycoming Engines in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. Mike, you gave a forum today talking about fuels. That's a hot topic here at Oshkosh this year. Since we last talked, which was about 7 weeks ago, have you seen progress in the field as far as getting the attention that this issue really needs to have?
I think there's been some nice progress in the field on this. I think certainly the reporting has brought it to people's attention. So there's some real positives that have happened there. You're seeing some movement within the ASTM. You're seeing some movement within the FAA to get proactive on it. What I will say is kind of disappointing is that there's also, when you take a look at the blogs and the threads and the discussions, there still is a lot of not in my backyard kind of dealing is that, yeah, I think it's important, but it doesn't affect me at the end of the day, so maybe I'm not going to make my voice known. So I think it's been a real positive. I think people are starting to get engaged, but people need to understand how connected this whole subject is. And if we move one element of the fuels equation for aviation, is that everybody's affected. It's not, you know, I could run MoGas and I won't be affected on this. You're talking about a pretty substantial linked system.
Now, you talked a little bit about the timeline, and we're taking as a given here that tetraethyl lead is going to go away, and we're not going to even argue about that any further. So it's at some point it's going to go away, and we hear a lot of back and forth on this. Some of it suggests that it's a 10-year timeline, but you're... If you agree with the 10-year timeline, and I think a lot of that is implementation, you're seeing that the visibility on a solution has to be much, much sooner.
Yes. I mean, if you talk about a natural timeline for implementation, we need to move an industry that was built on a fuel and running on that for decades. And it is going to take logically close to a decade to move it. And that's after you find the solution. Is we don't have 5-7 years to figure out what we want to do and then 3 years to implement it. We, you know, Lycoming's perspective, I think we've got 1 to 2 years to figure out what we want to do, where we're going to compromise, where we're going to not compromise, get the testing done to understand what that is so we can get work on migrating the fleet. That's a very big issue. It's not necessarily a technical issue, it's a logistics issue, and it's one that we can't underestimate.
Now, you gave a 10-point action program there. We're not going to go down the full 10 points, but two of them are important. One is the ASTM process, the acceleration of the ASTM process, and the other one is the getting some enthusiasm in the owner groups and the trade groups to really develop the demand for the fuel so that investors will see the demand is there and want to invest in it. Tell us about the ASTM procedure first. Do you see some response there? Do you think that procedure, that consensus-based approval is going to accelerate?
I think it's positive. I think in the last ASTM meeting, and Lycoming is a participant, there was a real recognition of the urgency of the situation, and I do find it hopeful that they will take a look at some of their standing procedures of, you know, the regular meetings on a quarterly basis and take a look at how we really accelerate the process to get test specifications in place so we have an objective basis for analysis and test. I think that, you know, we do have to realize that a large part of the ASTM membership are volunteers in this. So companies have to allow their employees to divert time and resources toward what's a very important task. But I think if those companies that are effectively allowing their employees and participating in this understand the big picture for themselves, we'll be able to make time and establish the urgency and get that ASTM process to move faster. There's a lot of work to do here, and it's very technical in nature. It's very objective in nature. I think it's very essential for what we need to do for the next steps. But you know, the ASTM also needs to recognize the timeline here doesn't allow a 2 to 3 year consideration, which has been kind of the norm. We're in this kind of bind, is that we really need to move much faster than we've ever done before, with some very defined targets and structure to the project. So I think it's a positive movement, but I think that people need to keep up the pressure, because it's only via that that companies and participants are going to allow this engagement and allow the ASTM to move faster.
And the last question relates to the owner groups, trade groups. How do you get them kind of ignited to get their memberships interested enough to develop that demand you're talking about?
There's been, you asked about what happened in the last 7 weeks. I think that since we last talked, there's really been an increased set of awareness, and now you see folks like 100 Octane for My Airplane coming up, the owners associations, and that's a fantastic positive to see that kind of grassroots movement gelling. One of the items I threw in the presentation there was, you know, when aviation fuels were developed in earnest, that was World War II, and that was driven by basically the U.S. Department of Defense providing a singular point of focus for a project. Well, now we don't have that, so we're relying upon the owners associations to establish this demand. And really, if they don't understand that they really need to create that demand, you will not get the investment for innovators who want to bring this stuff forward. So I think that remains a critical issue. And if there's one thing that I could convey to the groups is that you've got a lot of bright technical people who can work the problem. But if the owners groups aren't there making it clear that this is a solution that they need to have, those great technical folks aren't going to have anything to work on, because nobody is going to come to the table thinking that they can get their return on investment. So if there's one thing that I ask the readership or however we call the podcast ship to listen to, is that you need to make certain people understand is that we think that aviation grade fuel of an equivalent performance to 100 low lead fuel, okay, is what we need. And let's keep our eye on the ball.
Okay, thanks very much for speaking with us, Mike.
Okay, thank you, Paul.
This is Paul Bertarelli reporting from EAA Air Venture 2010. Thanks for listening.
With over 700 FBOs nationwide and the strongest supply in the industry, it's no wonder Phillips 66 is aviation's number one fuel provider. Phillips 66, the most trusted wings in aviation.